We'll keep reading a little bit. All right, verse 24. He cried out and said, "My father Abraham, be gracious to me. Please send Lazar and let him dip the tip of his finger into cool water to cool my tongue, for I am suffering in this burning." The Pharisees taught that Gehenna is a place of fire, punishment, and purgation where the souls of the dead receive their comeuppance. However, in paradise, there's a bright spring of water, right? That's what we learned. Gehenna is a dry and waterless place of unending thirst. This reminds me of a passage in the Jerusalem Talmud about a tax collector and a scholar. It's a story. It's not really a parable. It's a story. A certain poor scholar died. He had a small funeral. At the same time, Bar Ma'ayan, the village tax collector, died. The whole town took time off to mourn him. The poor scholar's friend wept, saying, "Woe for the righteous of Israel, they will have nothing." Because, you see, what's happened is there was this very pious scholar. He died, nobody noticed. The tax collector dies, they have a big funeral. His friend, the friend of the scholar, is upset by this. After a few days, the holy man saw his fellow holy man in a dream, walking among gardens, orchards, and fountains of water. These are all, you know, things that should be familiar to us by now. He saw Bar Ma'ayan, the village tax collector, with his tongue hanging out by a river. He wanted to reach the river, but he could not reach it. So here we have a very similar setup as what we have in Luke 16. You've got a good guy and a bad guy. The good guy is this poor guy. The bad guy is this very wealthy guy. They both die. The good guy is in paradise where they have this nice spring of water and trees and whatnot. The bad guy, he's in torment because he's so thirsty and he's by a river that he can't reach the water. It's very much like he's tormented like Tantalus. You know, he's trying to lap at the water, but it's beyond his reach. In the master's parable, the rich man appeals to Abraham for mercy, which is interesting because in the days of the master, some people believed that the merit of Abraham would get them out of going to Gehenna. So here's a text from Genesis Rabbah. It says, "Rabbi Levi said in the hereafter, Abraham will sit at the entrance to Gehenna and permit no circumcised Israelite to descend into Gehenna." So Abraham's sort of like St. Peter there, you know. Here's one from the Talmud. "There are some who are sentenced to suffer in Gehenna," some Jews, "who are suffered to sentence to suffer in Gehenna, but our father Abraham comes and brings them up to himself and receives them to himself." That sentiment, I believe, compelled John the Immerser to rebuke the people, saying, "Bear fruit in keeping with repentance, and don't say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our father.'" If those listening to the master's parable had been of that persuasion, that, well, Abraham will get me out, it's okay, I'm a Jew, I don't need to worry about Gehenna, then he was aiming the parable straight at them. And maybe we should also take some caution from this ourselves. If we have a theology that makes us just a little too comfortable to the point where there's no more personal responsibility, then the parable is aimed at us too. Verse 25, Abraham said, "My son, remember that you took your goodness in your life and Lazar took what was bad. Now he is comforted and you are in suffering." In other words, Lazarus had an awful life, and the rich man had a great life. And now it's reversed. According to the Pharisees, social station and rank will reverse in the kingdom and in the world to come. The first will be last, the last will be first. This means that the prominent in this world will be of little account in the next world, and the lowly and the downtrodden in this world will be prominent in the next. For example, here's the classic text on that. Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, became ill and fell into a trance. When he recovered, his father asked him, "What did you see?" He said, "I saw an upside-down world." He replied, "Where those on top are underneath and those underneath are on top." Rabbi Yehoshua said, "My son, you saw a true world." The Pharisees believed that the comfortable in this world would pay for it in the hereafter if they did not use their wealth to help the less fortunate. Rabbi Judah the prince said, "Whoever accepts the delights of this world will be deprived of the delights of the world to come." And the Talmud explains, "The Holy One, blessed be he, brings suffering upon the righteous in this world in order that they may inherit the future world." Remember, the rabbis also taught that one who suffered unduly in this world need not suffer in Gehenna. Listen to this passage from the Talmud. "Three types of men do not see the face of Gehenna: those who suffer oppressive poverty, those afflicted with painful diseases, and those who suffer under the government." It's the Roman government. Some add, "Also he who has a bad marriage." Lazarus fell into at least the first two categories. He suffered oppressive poverty and painful diseases. Abraham tells the rich man, "Child, my son," he's still a son, "my son, remember, you had good things in your life. Lazarus had only bad. Now he's being comforted." Who knows? Maybe Lazarus had a bad marriage too. All right, verse 27. He said, this is the rich man speaking, "If that is the case, my father, I ask you to send him," Lazarus, "to my father's house, for I have five brothers. Let him testify to them so they do not come also to this place of suffering." Abraham said, "They have Moshe and the prophets. Let them listen to them," to Moses and the prophets. All right, I hope you're getting, if I have a theme here in this lecture. My theme is that Yeshua did not tell this parable to introduce the concept of life after death. Instead, the way that he's presenting the parable, he's assuming that his listeners already understand this stuff. They already understand the basic rewards of punishment reward and punishment after death. And as he tells the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, he's not introducing anything that you could call a new view of the afterlife, and he's not revealing any divine secrets. Instead, it's not an unprecedented peek behind the veil or something like that. He's just talking in the common everyday theological terminology of the Pharisees. And throughout his teachings, as I took you and I showed you all that teeth gnashing, and I showed you the fire and the worm that doesn't die and all this sort of thing, all these things, the immortality of the soul, the angelic escort of the soul, the immediate punishment and reward of the wicked and the righteous, the proximity of even like the geography of heaven and hell, of Gehenna and Gan Eden, the presence of Abraham, even at the entrance to paradise there. The resurrection of the righteous, a general resurrection of the righteous and the wicked, the final judgment. Everything the master says on these subjects is in keeping with the traditional views of Judaism. And if Yeshua disagreed with any of those traditional beliefs, he should not have been endorsing them by incorporating them into his teachings and into his parables. As Alfred Edersheim says, he says, if the views held at the time of Christ, whatever these views were, if Christ did not hold them, he at least did not directly contradict them, so far as we can infer, or intend to correct them.